What do you understand about the world? What do you understand about it? And what would you say to your 20-year-old self that just is about to win the title?
I would think about the world now that I'm one with everything. That we're involved with everything. I'm involved with the shit. I'm involved with the bugs. I'm involved with the ants, the butterflies, the cats, the dogs. I'm one with everything. The cars, smoke, everything. I'm one with it all.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Hot Boxing. I'm Evan Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson.
Dude, we got a great guest today. We got a guest who I'm a big fan of. I heard this guy on a podcast a couple years ago, I think. And his name's Louis Howes. Great to have you here, brother.
Thanks for having me.
What's up, Louis?
Thank you.
What do you call yourself? Are you, you're sort of like this new age philosopher. Mm. You're a young great thinker.
I appreciate it.
Get the fuck out of your brother.
Yes. He's written a book. Sorry, let me give you a little more intro. He's written a book, New York Times bestselling author.
Uh-huh.
This book in particular that's on my mind, which is very pertinent to our show, is called The Mask of Masculinity.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we got a lot to talk about there.
It was a European, I think it was not a philosopher, but I think a therapist, and he did the same thing with The Mask of Sanity.
He
got his fucking name.
Ooh.
But it was about everyday people, we're not who we appear to be.
Yeah, we put on masks.
Oh, yeah.
We put on this projection to try to fit in or try to make people like us or try to please people or win people over. And we were just talking about this before, that you played in the NFL for a number of years. And you had an identity, a mask that you wore to fit in, to be that player, right? To play the role of lineman, big tough guy, whatever it may be.
You had to be the tough guy because everybody, I don't care who was the gangster anymore, they respected a tough guy.
That's it. Yeah, that was your life growing up. They respected you because you didn't back down from anyone.
Yeah, I was bullied when I was a kid. And I said, wow, if I was like these guys that were bullying me, nobody would fuck with me.
Right.
Nobody would put
and you became the ultimate bully of the world by destroying everyone. And here's the thing. Yeah. These masks that men wear, they serve a purpose because it helps us get a result in our life. You know, I wore the athlete mask, which was I will do whatever it takes to win at all costs. I will freaking destroy people on the field. I will train my butt off. I'll hurt myself. Mm-hmm. I won't sleep. I'll freaking do whatever to get bigger, faster, stronger at all costs so that I can achieve my goal. And here's the crazy thing. These masks work because you were in the NFL. You became the ultimate bully and were the greatest fighter of all time. But here's what doesn't work. We are left with this sense of like this prison inside, right? We might achieve success on the outside, but then we are prisoners and we are unfulfilled on the inside and we don't know what inner peace is. So the masks hold us back from inner peace.
And we take that out on our loved ones, the people close to
everyone.
Us, our family, our children.
Everyone. Everyone suffers around us when we wear masks.
Absolutely.
So, So that's why I wrote the book, because I was achieving at every level. I was making millions. I was playing professional football. I was accomplishing things, but I was suffering inside.
I knew if I didn't change, I couldn't have a family. Like, my kids wouldn't respect me. I was just on that verge where my kids were almost not respecting me no more.
Really?
Almost right there. The clip of it is so fucking frightening.
Wow. How did it feel when they weren't when they started to not respect you?
I don't know. I felt like dying. I wanted to kill myself.
Yeah.
That's all I have with my children. They didn't respect me. They wouldn't live anymore.
Wow. How old were you then?
39.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that was a big wake-up call for you? That was something
pretty big, yeah.
So how did you start to shift to get their respect again?
It was hard.
Because it was 40 years of conditioning.
It was so hard. You just had to, you had to be available. You had to come to work. You had to show up. You know, you have gratitude.
Do you have a lot of gratitude in your life right now?
Oh, I've been beaten in submission, so I have a lot of gratitude,
Yeah. What was the biggest beatdown you've ever had, whether it be physically or emotionally or spiritually?
I lost my 4-year-old daughter. She accidentally killed herself by accident.
Oh, man.
She jumped on a treadmill. She didn't know how to work it, and she got hurt.
Wow.
So after that, I didn't know what to do. And I just didn't know what to do.
How'd you recover from that?
I haven't. I just know in order to make her happy, I have to do good things and be positive.
Yeah. Wow. Did you ever think positive before that moment or when you were fighting as well, or was it always negative?
No, it was always about me. It was always about my dick. Fuck everybody else.
Yeah.
You know, I would give people money and stuff. I was capable of being kind to people, nice to people, but it didn't matter. I just wanted what I wanted, and that's all that mattered.
Right. Why do you think we care so much about those things, about like what we win or what we get? Why do you think men in general?
Because, listen, this is what happened. Us as little kids, especially boys, what we hear, we think of great men all the time. We think of people that we heard. Hey, you hear about that guy that knocked that guy out of the crown of the corner? What was his name again? We always hear a legend. We hear about Jim Brown. We hear about Bruce Lee. We hear about all these guys. And we want to know how this badass guy is telling me about these guys. I'm scared of this guy that's telling me about these fucking guys.
Yeah.
So I want to be like these guys, so guys like this could be afraid of me or respect me or something, you know?
And it's ancient.
Yeah.
It's very ancient. Knights slaying the dragons, you know, going out on a hunt.
Like
and
Jim Brown, the football player.
Yeah, he's a legend.
Like, I didn't know he was a football player. From the streets, I thought he was a badass kicking motherfuckers' asses in the street. I didn't know he was a football player. I thought he was a badass
That's
motherfucker.
Awesome.
I had no idea he was a football player until I got older.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Why do you think you wanted respect was the thing you wanted the most from people?
Because they bullied me all the time. Everybody picked on me.
Why do you think they picked on you?
I don't know, because I had nobody to protect me. There's some people in the neighborhood that got very intimidating families. They may have 20 kids in the family.
You're not going to mess with those kids.
And they're very aggressive.
Yeah, yeah.
Their cousins and their brothers and everything, and they're very aggressive. So we don't bother those guys.
Yeah, because they got a family to get behind you. Yeah, you had no family to get behind you.
I had no family like that, no.
Dang.
What do you think about that, Lewis? Why do people... What is the thing about bullying? Is it that we're programmed to gain superiority over others?
I think bullies are very insecure, and they want to feel they want to feel in power, and they're actually powerless. And so they create scenarios to have power over other people to feel like they're in control. You know, they're very insecure. I think we've all bullied at some time, whether it be one person or a group of people or, you know, in a relationship. I think we've all are at fault of it. Because we want to feel a sense of control or power or certainty. And that lack of certainty, you know, when you're 12 years old growing up, you have no certainty. It's like, who am I? What am I doing? You know, we have no certainty.
You know, the fact is, as we talk, really look at this, as we talk, Evan, when you think about it, these few questions, check it out. Who are you?
Yeah. No one knows when you're 12.
Yeah. Where have you came from?
Yeah.
What is your purpose? Why are you breathing? Why do you look the way you do?
Yeah.
Who's the first you? That you know, you have to make your existence. The first one, probably a million years ago, 10 million years ago. Who is he? What did he look like? Was he black? Was he Asian?
Crazy, right?
You don't even know who the first us was.
Why do you think you're here, Mike?
Excuse me?
Why do you think you're here?
Why do I think I'm here? To understand the world.
Yeah.
Before I die. To be lucky to understand it and be conscious of it before I die.
What do you understand about the world so far in your – you're 50 – how old are you right now?
52.
What do you understand about it? And what do you understand about it? And what would you say to your 20-year-old self that just is about to win the title?
I always think about the world now that I'm one with everything. That we're involved with everything. I'm involved with the shit. I'm involved with the bugs. I'm involved with the ants, the butterflies, the cats, the dogs. I'm one with everything, the clouds. The sewage, everything, the cars, smoke, everything. I'm one with it all.
What did you think back then?
Excuse me?
What did you think your understanding of the world was when you were 20?
When I was 20?
What was your viewpoint of the world?
I had no viewpoint. Only thing I knew was these guys were great champions and I wanted to be like them.
Yeah. It's interesting. I remember when I was a kid, when I was five, I would watch... college football with my dad on TV. I would watch Ohio State Buckeyes. I'm from Ohio, a small town in Ohio called Delaware, Ohio. And I would see the All-Americans on TV, and my dad would get so excited about the All-American football players at Ohio State. And I was like, because my dad talked about it, that's what I wanted to be. And so my whole life became, how do I become an All-American athlete? And that was the only thing I cared about. And then when it was over, I was like, well, who am I and what do I do with my life? Just kind of like when you retired from football, this identity. You know?
It's so crazy.
Had, Dick Buckus, all those guys had to deal with that.
Yeah.
Imagine being so immortal in the football field, yeah. And then that stops.
Stops. And then you live in the past, yeah. Constantly.
You can't help it. How could you not help it?
Yeah.
Tell me that, especially in the 50s and stuff, when people wasn't elevated on, after we're done with this, if we haven't saved up, we're fucked.
Screwed.
If we didn't save up after this career, we're fucked. We're in the gutter again. I don't care, black, white, Chinese, unless somebody's such a big fan, they have rich guys, I loved them when I played, and they gave you a job. That's what happened, yeah. To a lot of those guys. They became salesmen for the big corporation because guys loved them when they were playing.
But then the glory was over, though, you know?
It's the ultimate endeavor to have to reinvent yourself.
Scary.
And everyone has to do that.
All the time.
Yeah, all the time.
Every couple of years, it's almost like you have to.
All the time. Shedding skins, letting go, transforming your mindset and your thoughts.
Yeah. You know? What was it like for you when you had to reinvent through financially? Because I think you went bankrupt
big
once
time,
or twice.
Yes.
Or you yes, know, how did
time.
You rebuild and reinvent from a place of, man, I just had everything and now I lost it for whatever reason.
No, I had everything, and next thing you know, I'm $60 million in debt.
So now you owe everything.
Could you imagine, dude?
You owe everything
like
now.
Fucking million.
How'd you get out of that?
Listen, right. For some reason, they thought I was trying to get out of this bankruptcy. They thought I was going to still fight. I had no intention of fighting. They said, nah, you got to fight. You got to get out of this deal, then you're going to fight for a whole bunch of money.
Yes.
You fucking sucker us. So they kept thinking I was going to fight, and they wouldn't give me deals. And so I just kept paying a little bit at a time, make some money. I kept paying them. And then, next thing you know, I would owe them money for so long. They would say, hey, you owed us for so long, so we're going to decline you owing us this. Because you're not paying us. You owed us for so long, so now you don't owe us $5 million. We're going to take $7 to $5 million off. And so that's how I was getting down. And so they said, all right, we're going to take this off, too. And I wound up owing them $2 million, and I paid that, and it was over. I said,
done.
Fuck!
Oh, nice.
Wow. Wow,
kept
bro.
Kept taking it down, but you haven't paid in 7 months. If you don't pay this in 7 months, you're going to take $20 million off. It's not like that.
Just never pay them.
Yeah, you never pay. How could they do that? They're supposed to take everything. I was living in Madden. They're supposed to took all that shit. How did that happen?
Interesting.
I was thinking, how did I'm keeping all this shit? Why are they not coming to take this stuff?
Interesting.
Yeah, they never came to take anything.
What do you think the moment? What was the?
I had cars and stuff. I couldn't ride them because I couldn't have money to put gas in them. That Rolls Royce, I can't ride them. Got no
just
gas.
Just sitting there. Yeah.
That's so crazy, Mike.
Crazy.
Was there a moment in your life? Was it maybe the bankruptcy, or when your daughter died, or when you lost respect with your kids? Was there a moment when like things really started to shift in your mind to say, okay, I need to figure this stuff out. I need to really. You know.
I didn't have the slightest idea. I got involved with this woman who's now my wife, right? And she just kept saying, everything's going to be all right. We're going to write a show. We're going to produce television shows and movies, and this is going to be over. And I'm looking at her, and I'm still strung out on drugs. And I'm looking at her, saying, that's delusional. And next thing you know, we were talking about, we went and saw Chaz Palminteri at Bronx Tale, but we saw it on stage. It was magnificent. It was so quiet, you could hear a mouse piss on cotton. He was so captivating. You know what I mean? This guy was so captivating. Chaz Palminteri was so captivating. Everybody was so quiet, you could hear everything. And I said, baby, I want to do that. Baby, I do that before. Like, when I go to Europe, people ask me questions, and I answer the question. But this time, I just want to answer a question. I just do it, you know, I mean, theatrically, like Mr. Palminteri. Yeah. And she was writing the script. And we were rehearsing. She was writing the script. We didn't know how we were going to ever do it. And then a friend of mine was at the gym where I work at. And a guy was there. Don't Mike Tyson work? And he said, yeah. He said, if you ever see him, give him my call. I want to do a show with him.
Whoa, bro.
Came out of nowhere.
That's the universe. Manifesting that shit.
It came out the universe. A week later. So we called the guy. It took my wife, I think, 6 weeks to write the show.
Wow.
Her first show ever. We did the show. Standing room only, knockout, blast all over the world, knocked the country out. We did it on Broadway for 3 weeks.
First show in Vegas?
Yeah, on Vegas, but knocked everybody out. Everybody came in town. So one of Spike Lee's assistants came and saw the show and said, Spike, I think we should get into this. And then Spike said, want to go to Broadway? I was in Poland. He called me and said, want to go to Broadway? We went to Broadway. When we went to Broadway, everybody came. All the Broadway shows and actresses and actors came. Stevie Wonder. It's everybody came. All the actors who we did on a Pangea here in California. All the people from the sets came. All the actors and actors. Just everybody came. It was so awesome. I couldn't believe we could ever do something like that. Be on that level where they would come watch us do something other than a fight. Something that I'm not going to get hurt doing. I said, I'm performing. These guys are coming and they're enjoying it.
Mike, I've heard you talk about this a lot, but how did you feel being so honest and vulnerable about your experiences? Was that the first time you had really done that? I mean,
yeah, kind of. But listen, it was embarrassing at first, but the people knew all this. The people that was all they knew, they saw what happened in the paper. They read the paper. Mm-hmm. They saw what happened. They saw what happened. People complained about on television. So I couldn't – everybody knew what happened. So I had to be very honest.
You did the eight. You were the 8 Mile move. It was like the end of 8 Mile. We're just like, here's everything I did. You know, I'm going to say it all.
Yeah. Everybody knew it, but they just never heard me say it. But
that's
they all
the
knew
only
it.
Way.
Yeah, everybody knew. It wasn't no secrets.
I watched. I didn't watch it live. I wanted to when it was on Broadway, but I remember watching it on was it HBO
one
or
of those shows,
yeah, something
shows
like that. And my friend saw it, and he's like, "You have to watch this." He goes, "It's one of the greatest performances I've ever seen." And I was like, "No freaking way!" Mike Tyson doing a one man show. I was like, "There's no way." And I turned this thing on, and I'm not just saying this because you're here. I turned this thing on, and I was like, "Wow, you're an incredible storyteller and an incredible performer." You know, obviously you're a great performer as an athlete, but you transitioned, and I don't think anyone saw it coming that you had that capacity and capability to captivate an audience, whether it be live or TV audience, and you did an incredible job, man.
Thank you.
It was inspiring.
But listen, Evan, my wife, it was supposed to be a gritty, hardcore show of a hardcore guy. It came out like a comedy. They laughed at my hard, tough life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking about not having a father. The people broke our left, so I ran back to the street. I said, babe, what's going on? What's happening? Why are they laughing? She said, it's going to keep it going.
Keep it going. It's
keep
good.
Keep it going. They're laughing. Keep it going.
What was the biggest lesson you learned about yourself after that whole experience had finished?
That shouldn't be too hard on myself. You know, I should be more appreciative of what I have accomplished from where I've came from.
That's amazing.
Are you usually hard on yourself?
Absolutely.
Why?
I don't know. That's all I've ever known. Because if I made mistakes, I got harshly, you know, verbally punished. You heard some bad stuff.
Of course.
You fucked up.
Yeah, of course.
You heard some stuff you didn't want to hear. Wow. So you get yourself numb to that by calling yourself that all the time.
I'm a loser. I suck.
Yeah, what the fuck are you doing? Are you stupid, motherfucker? Dumb fucking nigga. How could you do that?
What do you say to yourself now?
Huh?
What's the conversation you say to yourself?
Oh, I love myself. I love my kids. Isn't your kids awesome? Aren't you very lucky that you have your wife? Wow. What would you be without her?
Yeah. Wow. It's beautiful, man.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, if Mike Tyson can transform, you know what I mean, as an example of a man who's gone through a lot of trauma.
Life prepares you. Mm. Life prepares you for everything. Prepares you for doing 100 years in jail, prepares you for getting ready to go to the electric chair, prepares you for death. You know what I mean? When life is enduring with you, when you're enduring with life and you're making the age limits, going to your 50s, your 60s, your 80s, and you're making it up there, you're prepared. All your friends are no longer around. Most of your family members are not around. What the fuck am I doing here? Then we go.
Wow.
You know?
What's the thing that's prepared you the most? What experience that you've gone through do you think has prepared you the most for where you're at now?
Yes, dropping my ego. I think my life would be disastrous if I never took the toad. I took this ancient medicine, the toad, right? And it changed my whole perspective on how I look at life and how I look at people and how I talk to people.
Wow.
Do you know about the toad?
No.
Wow, why don't you educate me? That's going to be very interesting.
Tell me.
You're an awesome guy.
Please. Thank you.
So you know about ayahuasca?
Of course, yeah.
Oh. So the active ingredient in there is DMT.
Yep.
So the toad, from its venom, which they extract and then dry it over a certain period of time, it crystallizes. It contains 5-MeO-DMT, which, from the way I understand it, is DMT with an extra methyl oxy group attached to it, which makes it
Like super steroided. Like,
so it's supercharged like
yeah.
to your brain. So it crosses the blood-brain barrier faster.
Wow.
And so, you know, it does, you vaporize it. Mm-hmm. And it does very much the same things as DMT, but it's really the top of the pyramid as far as entheogenic substances.
Wow.
And so, you know, people are cured of depression and addiction and, you know, are released of trauma and pain.
Right, yeah.
And so Mike,
so you did it.
Had a very transformational quite a few experience.
Times. And listen, if you take this medicine, it's a possibility you may feel like God.
Wow.
And then you may have a small encounter with God and say, oh, God, please forgive me. I'm sorry.
Is that what happened for you?
Yeah.
What was the encounter like?
I felt the pain of everybody I ever hurt before in my life.
Wow. That sounds pain. That feels, that's fine.
God, please, Lord, I'm sorry. It was crazy.
You felt the pain of everyone you hurt? How many people do you think you've hurt?
Oh, man.
Hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands.
It's so amazing, that pain that you could feel. It was, I had nobody, it was nothing. I just existed.
Wow.
And you could just feel everything. You feel, and I just didn't understand. It's like being dead. You're vulnerable as hell. There's no ego. You're afraid of everything.
Naked, yeah.
Yeah. It's, please, don't hurt me. I'm sorry. It's, please, God, please.
Wow.
You know, you don't even see nobody, and you're scared. You have to feel. You just got to feel you're scared. I'm sorry, please. It's just, I don't understand it, and I've never been the same since I did it.
Wow.
I don't think about hurting people. I don't think about loving people. You just don't want to do that stuff anymore.
Wow.
You know, I've never been the same since I died. In my time on life, I'm talking a little fast, but in my time on life, I thought I'd seen it all. I thought I'd been everywhere. I think I fucked everybody, drank everybody, smoked with everybody. I did it all. And I realized I don't know nothing, and I'm nobody.
Wow.
I don't know anything. I don't know where I came from. I don't know my real name. I mean, somebody named me Mike. I don't know who the fuck I am.
Right.
I'm just here.
Wow. When did you take this?
9 months ago was the first time. I did it recently, not too long ago, but
October?
The first time, in October.
Wow.
Yeah. It's been pretty amazing to be on this ride with Mike, and it's just crazy amount of wisdom and insight that comes from spending time with this guy.
And I always used God as a way to get to be in. I was never really, I knew of God, but it wasn't bigger than me.
You were bigger than God.
Yeah.
You were God.
Yeah, yeah, my fucking thick head. And then you realize that you have to get on your knees. You don't know what his name is, but you know you have to worship.
Wow.
You know? After taking the toll, yeah. Yes.
Once you've been humbled a certain amount of times, then you're like, okay, I'm not God anymore, right?
Listen, I'll tell you about that ego. I tell you, even though you're humble, you stop, he's still there. Don't let him look at the fucking, I might look around and look at the fucking reflection and say, wow, I'm handsome. It'll come, the ego's a motherfucker. Once you take the toll, you know he ain't shit.
Yeah. How do you let go of ego? And what advice would you give to men who are so ego-driven? What would you say to them on how to, like, let it go? When they're so attached to it.
Listen, I'm going to tell you something about the ego. From my experience, I'm nothing but just a junkyard gutter kid, right? But I had nothing. This old Italian man gave me an ego, right? And he gave me everything I wanted. The ego gave me everything I ever wanted and more. But it took so much more in return.
What did it take? It
took everything.
Wow. It
took everything. Been in prison. It took everything.
Family, love.
Yeah, well, you don't care anymore. You're almost an animal.
Wow.
You know? Oh, I don't never want to go there again.
Wow, man.
Why you want to live like an animal when you can just say, give it up? Hey, I don't want to do that no more. I love you.
Wow. It's amazing.
Crazy.
It's awesome.
What's the thing, the lesson you have still yet to learn for yourself to get to that next level that you want to be at? Is there a lesson or is there a challenge that you're struggling with, a question inside that still keeps you from more love, more fulfillment, impact? Yeah, what is that?
Why me? Who the fuck am I? Why do millions of people know me and think of me in nice ways? Why me? Why'd I have to meet this guy? He had nothing. He just died broken. But how did he give me the tricks that he had to give me what I want? Wow. You know, why me? Why did? How did he know I was the guy for this job?
Wow.
I never had a boxing glove all my life. I never thought about sports. I never played sports in my life. How did he know I was the guy?
The universe.
Yeah. How did this fucking guy know? That blows me away. Yeah. How did this guy know? Crazy.
What do you think the world needs more of right now? What is it? What's it missing?
Listen, I don't know. I can't say no. I can only say love, kindness, yeah. Passion, patience, you know, among each other. Yeah. Look at each other as equals, you know? Everyone can succeed in one particular way. We could all succeed if we work together in any way.
So true.
You know, anyway.
No one wins unless we all win.
Exactly. Yeah. And the conduct of one is the fate of us all. And there's billions of us on it. The conduct of one is the fate of us all.
Say that one more time. The conduct of one?
The conduct of one of us is the fate of all of us.
What does that mean for you?
Huh?
What does that mean to you?
That we all have to be in sync with one another.
Wow.
One guy robs a store and murders some people. That's the fate of all of us. One guy kills a guy because he's a different color or a different religion. That's the fate of all of us.
Some powerful shit.
Is he always
this yeah.
insightful?
Yeah. He is, man. I mean, and that's just really, to me, why I think I've connected with Mike so much is, you know, through my career in the NFL and coming out of it, this dissolution of ego. That's taken place for me over the last 4.5 years. You know, ego is just, it crushes you, really, at the end of the day, because that's the thing that ties you into all of your desires and ideas about who you are and what you're supposed to be in this manufactured realm.
And it chases everybody that loves you away.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
You only have bullshit motherfuckers around you.
It's never enough.
Your ego can never have nobody you love around you. It won't work.
Why is that?
If somebody loves you and your ego's fucking acting up and it's controlling you, you can't have
them. You push them away,
You slammed them away.
No matter how much they try to love you, you're just like...
You can't do it. You can't do it. It won't work.
Because you're never satisfied. You're never filled. That hole is never full, you know? Not enough women, not enough cars,
money,
not enough money, not
accomplishments,
enough
accomplishments, press,
not enough fucking consumption. There's not enough to just consume and feed that thing, feed that beast.
And that kind of sickness, if you can't have it all, you'd rather have nothing.
Because
it's not enough. It's not all of it, I'd rather have nothing.
Is that what happened to you?
I'd rather have nothing. If I can't have everyone, everything, every girl, every drug, every day, every movie star, if I can't have every one of them, all of them, I'd rather have nothing.
Really?
Yeah.
How many women do you think you've been with?
I don't know. I'm not proud of it, though.
Yeah, yeah.
Not stuff that I'm proud of.
Yeah.
Because I don't even know why I did it.
Yeah.
I didn't know what was the purpose of it.
To try to fulfill something that we were missing.
No, it was, listen, I wanted those women to love me.
Why?
Because I didn't love myself.
Wow. Did you let them love you?
No fucking way. How can I don't love myself? I gotta let them love me. My love was to make me come.
Right.
Or to tell me I was great. Or to tell me that was the best fuck you ever had. That was my ego.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That was my fulfillment. I would pay you. I bought your fucking house or car. I'm the best, aren't I?
Wow.
Woo.
What's, how long have you been together with your wife?
More than 10. We've been married 10 years.
What's the greatest lesson she's taught you in the last 10 years?
That I don't own her.
Did you used to feel like you owned the relationship?
I owned everything that was in my presence.
Wow.
You're around me, you're just a fucking worker. I own you, motherfucker. You're just around me, you're a fan. You're around me, I own you, motherfucker.
Wow.
Fan, I own you, mother. You're around me, you're just in my presence. You want anything, you accept anything from me, I own you.
You owe me, I own you, yeah.
Yeah.
So when did she say, you don't own me? What was that like when she confronted you and said, hey, you don't own me?
Listen, let me tell you, have you ever been married?
No, I've never been married.
All right, let me tell you something. I'm going to tell you something. Marriage is something, like, it's like a roller coaster, right?
Yeah.
And it's really scary because the roller coaster goes up and it gets to the top and it's making a lot of fucking noise. And that's the beginning of making a lot of noise by being in love. And then we get to the top. And then we come down fast. And you can't learn this stuff. You got to grow with this stuff.
Yeah,
you got to go through it.
You can't get ready for this. You can't prepare for this. You know what I mean? You got to find out if me, you and this person really care about each other. Love is out of the question now. We're married. Fuck love. Now it's about how determined you are to make this work for the betterment of your children, your name, God. You know what I mean? How tough are you now? You're a tough guy. I want to see how tough you are. You beat up a lot of people. Let's see how tough you are with this.
Wow.
You know what I mean? This is for God. Let's see how tough you did. This is for money, nigga. Let's see what you could do for God.
Mm. What's the greatest?
Awesome.
What's the thing you love about her the most now?
Right now? That she puts up with me. She put up me for all those years. I can't believe it, baby. Can you believe we're still married?
10 years, yeah, wow.
And then I ran into the toad.
Wow.
Oh, man.
Mm. Toad life.
Oh, toad life.
Toad
dude.
Life up in here.
Toad life.
Oh, man.
You really have to cultivate a marriage, man. You have to work.
You've been married?
Yeah.
You're married right now? You got two kids, you said? Or
one kid.
One kid, 2 year old?
7 year old.
7 year old, wow.
Once you reach that spot where you understand, hey, we have to watch. We have to take care of ourselves. We have to make sure our side of the street is clean. I can't worry about her side of the street.
Yeah.
I got to make sure my side of the street is clean.
That's a key.
Give me the key. I'm not married. I've never been married. But give me the keys to getting into a marriage that's happy and staying in a happy one. Give me your top three each. I want to hear.
Listen,
don't take anything personal.
Never personal. If she says things that make.
How do you not take it personal? Listen, when it's wrong.
It takes a lot of practice.
It's not wrong because it's triggers.
When they're attacking you.
No, we have triggers from other relationships and other lives.
And our life,
they hit those triggers and we blame them for the trouble that everybody else caused us. Because they pressed those buttons that brought that pain back up.
So how do you not take it personally when they're like, you. Mother,
it takes a lot of practice.
You learn not to take it personally, and you say, and you just tell them, I love you.
It doesn't just happen.
Yeah, disarms them. Yeah. Okay, so
always coming back to I love you.
I love you. Please, I love you.
Remember how much you love them.
I love them so much.
And remind yourself of it. And for me, it's about taking the energy that I bring into life because we can take our families for granted.
Yes.
You know, and we fall into just autopilot, programmed mechanisms with our family, especially with an intimate relationship. And so over that time, like what Mike was saying, when that love or that lusty, super hot sex time wears off, because it's going
it will.
Because we are, as human beings, we are chemically programmed into that, especially men. You know, you are biologically, evolutionarily programmed to procreate and spread your seed. You know, so this is something that we have to battle or at least learn how to hone and control.
This is what I found out too, because you remember you said it comes a time when you don't want to do it no more? And say, yeah, Mr. Cool, but you still like to do it, but it's not like it used to be. That's because God prepares you. You know what I mean? Sometimes when you're younger, it has to go. You know? And when you get older, it's not that important.
Yes.
You don't care as much.
That's why God made it feel good.
Yeah.
Because even when you're older now, it's not that point, but it still feels good. I feel like feeling good right now.
Yeah.
You know?
So you have to come home and you have to create that romance and that love again. You know, you have
to remind yourself. Your wife would totally yourself. Lose it. She would lose. She'd pick something up. You're not. Why are you not being this way? Are you with somebody else this way? Women pick things up. They're very sensitive. They pick up things. And you have to be consistent. The same thing all the time.
All the time.
You stop one time or something. They pick up something. Consistency with women. I learned that late. To be consistent. You have to be consistent. Consistent. Never change your colors.
Wow.
Because they would pick that up quick. That's the first thing they pick. Hey,
one day you change?
1 second.
Well, that's why communication.
1 second. She picks it up. They're different than we are.
Communication.
You see a whole bunch of people in here? If my wife was in here, we're all talking. My wife would remember here only my voice. Everybody's talking. She remember everything I said. Everybody's talking, but she can only hear my voice. That's how women are. They get tuned into your voice, everything about you, your characteristics. They want to know you. They want to be the puppet master. Not they just want to know what it's. They don't want to be the puppet master. They just want to know every move you make.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes. And so, communication.
Yeah.
Communication.
So that's the third for sure.
Communication. Don't take things personally.
Yeah. And we're just remember how much you love them.
Yeah. And listen, please communicate, because something that happened 6 months ago and you won't know it till the outbursts come out. And you go, what the hell happened? Yeah. That's 6 months ago. What? Always communicate. Is everything okay, baby? Sure, nothing's on your mind? You don't want to talk about anything?
Every day,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I've learned that late. I started doing that recently, like a year ago. And I'm like, fuck.
Yeah, that's pretty new for me.
Wow.
You too?
Communication is just, that's a constant practice.
Evan, my whole life, once I've been married, all I did was throw money at my problems.
Yeah.
Buy a house, buy your mother a house, buy some cars, you know, get away. I can't fucking deal with no children shit today.
Yeah.
I don't want to hear what the teacher said today.
Yeah.
Fuck the teacher.
It's not, that's not what your partner wants from you. They want you to listen and be a partner.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They want to know how the money's building. They want to know everything. You know what I mean? And then when you realize you don't have the money like you used to have, and you used to, and throw the money at the problem, you have to deal now. Now
you deal with the problem.
And dealing with the problem, that's almost emotional. Like death. I'd rather almost die than deal with the problem. I wish I had something to throw away. I wish I had some money I could give a lawyer to deal with the problem.
I definitely confronted that coming out of the NFL.
Yeah.
You know, with my wife.
Yeah,
you know. It was like, oh, wow. I'm here in this marriage. There's nowhere to go.
That's so awesome.
You have all this free time.
Yeah.
You're not just at a job all day. You know.
Evan, you know
absolutely.
What? Remember one day I was in the thing, I said, why is it that men and women have to be married? Why is it that we look for a mate? And I tell you, a man needs a woman to make sure that he's a man. Because she'll make sure that we're a man, because she'll test us and try us and push us to the extent, to they see us.
Yeah.
Breaking point.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And by being a man, you got to control yourself.
Mm.
And that's what they teach us. Once you control yourself, you control your feelings with a woman, I don't want to say submit, but she understands I can't get to him. Once you control your feelings, because we don't have the emotional intelligence to control our feelings with the woman, because in our mind, our macho mind.
We want to react.
Oh, she's bitching us. She's making us look like a fucking bitch. She said that. No man would ever say that to me.
Well, it's about when... It's
ego.
About when you're when your woman confronts you with something, she's challenging your kingdom. Wow. She's challenging your masculinity.
Big time.
She's saying there's
every
something
man
fucked
gotta
up.
Go with for it. Every man, I don't care, big, strong, biker, gangbanger, tough killer. And with a woman, you're going to have to deal with that.
Yeah.
You're not married?
Not married.
Any
no.
lucky ladies?
I just started seeing someone recently, yeah. It's been
nice, man. Well, look forward to all this. You know?
You know what's so awesome, though? Once she finds out that you're the guy and you're conducting yourself like the guy and you move in or she moves in, that shit changes. She starts moving her shit around and moving this, and the house going to look like this. And that's it. It's a wrap. It's over. Yeah. You're getting ready to get married, boys. You don't think so either. You think, I'm going to get this. I'm going to keep getting it. Next thing you know, you don't want nobody else to get it. So the more you get it, the less you want anybody else to get it.
Yeah.
For some weird reason, I don't know why God made us like that. You should think, well, I already had it 100 times. I don't want it no more. The more you get it, the more you want to keep it.
Wow.
You know, that's how life prepares us for love, I guess. I don't know.
Wow.
A lot of people think, I'm going to beat love. I'm going to get all these bitches. I ain't going to marry. I ain't getting...
All right, we're going to take a quick break. So, you know, sports are on hiatus with everything going on in the world, but it doesn't mean that there's nothing to bet on. Now, our hotboxing good friends and exclusive partners, BetOnline, have all the action.
Major League Baseball continues to push through the summer, and there's no shortage of ways to get in on the action. On BetOnline, it has hundreds of odds features for you to bet on. Take advantage of every sport. And remember, our casino never closes. It's always there for you to check out and enjoy. BetOnline, your online sportsbook expert.
Hey, that's betonline.ag. And don't forget that promo code podcast1 for your sign-up bonus.
You've met a ton of guys.
Yeah.
Billionaires, celebrity. You've met the biggest, you know, influencers in the world, right? Over the last 30, 40 years. I'm curious, is there... a man that you know today or in the past who's maybe passed away who feels so much love in his heart and feels like he made it without having a great partner? Like, can he do it alone and just sleep with a bunch of girls, you know, take what he wants and do these
things? Be that guy.
Can he be that guy and still be, like, peaceful and love in his heart, or is he unfulfilled?
Dude, great. My experience.
Good question.
My experience, a guy that did a lot of stuff, women and stuff. I'm not proud of, like, the more women you you know, you would think the more women you have, the more crowning achievements you will receive from people or whatever the situation, the player yeah. world. Or, but the more women you be with, the more you feel like you've been taking parts away from you.
The hole is getting bigger.
Yeah, it feels like you're dying. The more they're taking from you, you feel like you're being taken. You're being torn apart. You're feeling empty. You're feeling dark. You feel just don't feel good about yourself.
Wow.
You're just a fucking fuck. Mm. You fucked all these people and you got nothing from them but a fucking cum. Mm. You know? And what did you get from that feeling? Why did you want to have that feeling? What was the cause of you having that feeling? Nobody had no, you know, maybe three people had babies, but it was like, what was the purpose of that feeling? I don't feel that way no more. Mm. I don't move like that no more. And I said, what was the purpose for me to be that way? What did I get out of it? No one got any babies. We got some diseases. You know what I mean? Nobody got any love from that. Mm. Or was that perceived as love? What was that? I tell my wife, what was that all about? You think I would meet all these people in the afterlife and stuff? What's the afterlife? What about the people that watch me fight? Would I ever see them again, all of them, collectively? If all this stuff go back, where do we all go? What's like what you're thinking right now? Well, what am I talking about? That feeling, that energy, where did that go when we die?
Yeah.
Like, you're not even talking, but that you're talking to you hear shit. Yeah. Where did that go when we die? That can't die. Where does it go? I'm just thinking, did that just black out? Mm. Like, you pull out a plug socket? What happens with that?
Goes you back know? Into the circulation.
But imagine if it go into a bug or a rock or a tree and we become that.
Yeah. I'm not sure how reincarnation works. You know? Do you come back as another human being? What, you know, and why, what person you come back as?
I was telling my wife hates bugs.
Yeah.
And every now and then a bug gets in the house and she freaks out, right? And I said, listen, that's probably your grandmother coming back in reincarnation. Wow. She wants to see you so bad. As soon as you come back, fucking squatter.
Wow.
You know, I think stuff like that.
Wow.
You know what I mean? I think these are people that we
absolutely.
Love. And we see them and we hate them so bad. And they say, Mike, look, it's me. But they're so fucked up. Yeah. I'm back. I thought I was dead. Hey, Mike, it's me. Boom. I kill them.
I know, man. I have a new practice. Any bugs?
I don't kill anything.
I bring them outside because my wife is the same. She's like, "Get the spider out of here!"
Yeah.
I'm like, "Babe, I tell my wife,
I'm not killing nothing." I tell that right there. I'm not killing. You gonna kill? You kill? I'm gonna kill anything.
Well, that might be my new policy. Yeah.
When do you feel the most loved, Mike?
When I feel the most loved?
When do you feel the most love in your heart?
You know when? When I'm around watching YouTube and I hear my kids running around and my wife comes up and down after feeding the kids, maybe come from work and I'll come upstairs and get in the shower, maybe sit on the bed or sit on her electric chair that puts electric vibes to her body, and I say I'm very happy. Everybody's in the house. All my kids are here, and that's when I'm the most loved.
Wow.
We're all together. All my oldest kids, the youngest kids, they're all from school, from home, and they're all back together in the same house. I feel one love at all.
Wow. That's awesome.
Why do you think that experience makes you feel the most loved and not something else?
Because everything that I love is, I feel secured. I feel like, listen, this is a false sense of security. I feel like I protect them right now. I can't do nothing.
Can't. Somebody can come in there and do something.
Somebody can come in and kill us all with a bat. Forget it, God. Right? But this is the fact. I think that they're safe now because they're with me. Boy, that's the ego shit.
Yeah,
I think they're fucking safe because they're with me. Isn't that sick? And I know that's bullshit, but it just makes me feel
it. Feels good, yeah. It makes you feel loved.
They're grown, too.
It's an interesting breakdown of that, Mike. You took it all the way through.
Yeah, I love them so much. I don't want them to ever, and I see, they never experienced anything I experienced. The kind of people that did the things and been in prison and got bad records and stuff. They're very clean kids. They got good stuff. They got good beginning. They don't got all the shit up with them. You know?
Awesome.
Well, my brother, I don't know how much time you guys have. I'm just asking some questions. when I was, how old was I? I was 8 years old. My brother went to prison for selling drugs. Mm-hmm. So when I was 8 until 12, we would drive, a couple hours on the weekend.
The guards treat you like shit.
It was crazy, man. Yeah, we'd drive the weekend. You know, it'd take like an hour to get through the security every time, and then I'd sit in this, you know, big room with all the convicts and my brother. And I was 8 years old until 12, and I remember just hearing these stories about prison that blew my mind as an 8-year-old, 9-year-old, just like what happened. I'm curious, what was the biggest thing you learned about yourself from being in jail?
What I learned from jail, this is what I learned from jail, which is going to be a trip, that there's fucking beautiful people in this world.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
There are. There were so many nice people there.
So many beautiful people in this world. They just had hard luck or bad times and stuff. It's beautiful people. And they may be killers. Yeah, they may have done some really horrific shit. Shot people, did some stuff. Drug deals went bad stuff. But they have a human quality about them. They're kind. You just, not, you just have a different look. We have a different perspective of a drug dealer. We're looking for the drug dealer. He has some guns. He's coming with his pack. And a bunch of guys got their guns ready for people, for action to come. And they come across a big bag, sadistic people. But that's not what it is. Mm-hmm. These are people on hard times.
Yeah.
And nobody, government's not doing nothing. They're not even giving welfare out anymore. You know, this is the company where if you're not doing well, if you don't make it, fuck you. That's the country we live in. I know you don't know what he likes to hear, but if you're not doing good, you don't have a good family, you don't got good education, you don't got good working skills, you're not a big, strong buck, fuck you. You come back from the army, you're paralyzed, you got shot up, fuck you. You're old, you can't work, can't do nothing, fuck you. You immigrate, don't got no skills. How your girlfriend look, how your wife look, they're beautiful. Can I fuck them? No. Fuck you.
Wow. Yeah, but people, there are some. I've been up to Lancaster, to the maximum security prison up there, and done some workshops. And I did a workshop for 5 hours with a former NFL guy, Steve Weatherford. I don't know if you.
I know Steve. Punter. We played together in Jacksonville.
There you go. Yeah, good buddy of mine. So we went up there. I took a few guys, and there was about a room of 25 murderers, right, that are all murdered. Or they were like on the scene when it happened and they got in there for life, whatever, right? And they were some of like the most lovely, kind men. Now, they'd been in there. They'd been doing the work. They've been working on themselves, transforming, you know, forgiving themselves. They've been in the work for years, decades. But there's some lovely people. If you're willing to change and do the work.
Yeah, I know that, but listen, how do these beautiful people that we're talking about, how do they get a good break when they come out there and they got this fucking stripes on their back? They want to read your portfolio and they see all this prison shit. You got some of these guys got the highest form of education from Ivy League schools.
Mm-hmm.
Online in prison, yep. They can't get a job.
Yeah, that's true.
They got Ivy League stuff.
There's a guy in Stanford from there,
They got Ivy League stuff, man. These guys are geniuses. They just went the wrong direction. These guys are geniuses. These guys are brainiacs. The reason why we can't have radios and stuff in the prison movie is because one of these little crazy intelligent bastards could turn it into a phone where they can hear what in the warden's office. You know what I mean? So that's why we can't have the things no more, the Walkmans no more, the radios, because these guys turn it into devices where they can hear in the warden's office when they go send the people up for searches and lockdowns and all that stuff. These guys are geniuses. You can't believe it. They're like Einstein. They're in there for murder.
I believe them.
These guys are so smart. They blow your mind, man.
Mm.
It's wild.
I'm curious.
They pass every state that the school requirements have for college, you know, institutions, everything. They pass them with flying colors like they were cheating. You think they're cheating at scores that they get?
Wow.
It's wild, man.
I'm curious. Hypothetically, let's say you could pick the day you get to die. How old would you want to be if you could say, okay, I can choose any day, any year. Would you want to be 100, 200 years old? Like, how old would you like to live until?
I wouldn't live long. Because I wouldn't want to see my children die.
Wow. Okay.
I wouldn't live long at all.
Wow.
That would kill me. If I, you know, see them growing old. I lost a daughter at 4, but imagine that me with the relationship I have with my children now. You know, I would probably handle it, but I wouldn't want to deal with it. I wouldn't want to see it. So I would want to die a lot earlier.
Right. Well, say it's your last day and your family was still alive.
Yeah.
And you died. Say it was 100 and your family was still alive, right? What do you think you would want people to say about you in 50 years from now if that was when you died? What would you want people to say about you at your funeral or just in life after you pass?
I don't know. I just want my kids to say my daddy took care of us.
Oh, yeah.
That's just more important, my daddy. You know, the other people are going to have their opinion, their individuals,
yeah.
Whatever it is, you know. And that doesn't bother me. It's for my children.
You care about
because
family.
I've always been fucked up in that department. Yeah. You know, my children have to come visit me on my birthday. They always have to see me in prison all the time and everything. I went through that part of my life. My kids always got to come through the glass, got to hang out with my kids. It was fucking
the worst, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
All that stuff.
That's cool, man.
It's a good question.
I'm always asking myself this stuff, you know?
That's what we are as people. We want people to think something about us. Mm. That's our ego. We want to think. I'm telling you, people's egos are so fucking big. They want to be. They're mad they can't be at their own funeral. They want to see who came, motherfucker.
I think I would want something similar, which is like I would want people to know that I really cared about humanity and I had a big heart and I wanted to help people as much as I could. And just that I was a kind human being. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I tried my best to do as good as I could to help people, you know.
And then you have to deal with this. Your best wasn't good enough.
Oh, man.
Imagine that. So,
you're dead then anyway, so you don't have to hear it anymore.
But listen, how do we know? Maybe death is another form of life that we go to. Another part of life. You know, how could life be glorious and death not be glorious? You can't have death if you don't have life.
Walk through the hall and do it all over again.
No doubt about it.
Wow.
But I say to myself about that too. I say, listen, is this an illusion? People are born every second. What is the big deal? Why would God need me to come back? He gets somebody. Other people keep coming. Why do we need my energy back anymore?
Yeah, right?
We already dealt with your energy. We doing some new shit. You die, motherfucker. Let's see what's coming. Like, just stay here. We don't want to talk to you about you. We may bring you up in some fucking history class, but fuck you. This shit work, okay?
Right.
Well, I think that.
I think that's a part of our ego, believing that we're going to continue to live and we're going to be reincarnated. No, you're finished, motherfucker. You had your turn. Come on.
Yeah.
You know?
It's possible, but you think about, like, your question, Mike, of Alexander the Great.
Yeah.
And the thousands of followers, hundreds of thousands of followers he had. And you think about, everybody knows Alexander the Great's name, but they don't know Joe Schmo.
Yeah.
From there. And the case is still that way. There are a handful of individuals in the grand scheme of civilizations that leave a mark that perpetuates on and on. And so what you might think is, why does the universe want me to? Why does spirit, why does God want me to come back or need me to come back? And it's because you carry with you this knowledge that you spread that, like a virus, a flow of water over humanity may touch and affect and inspire others to dream and think in this way. You know, and that's why you come back. Because for the souls that are here for maybe the first time, need to hear this type of stuff. Because it takes a lot to wake up in this day and age of technology, you know, hyper accessibility and
comparison, you know, everything, judgment, insecurities, everything. Yeah. Yeah.
So tell me this, right? How does somebody that lived in the Stone Age connect with somebody that lived right today? He died during the Stone Age, and now somebody that, do they intertwine one another? The energy intertwine one another? Hey, you're my cousin from 10 million years ago. Do we find things out? Do we receive knowledge from my death?
Yeah, because in our DNA, it's all encrypted, encoded into our DNA, into our cells.
Yeah.
All of this ancient knowledge of who we are.
For my brief investigation about the toad and all this stuff and the universe, it's just hard to believe that so many people are born and what happened to all these people. And like you say a man, say a Chinese emperor at one time, he led billions of people. And those billions of people accomplished great things. The Great Wall of China and all the great temples, all this stuff, right? Mm. Where are their names?
Mm.
Where are their names?
Gone.
That's a crime. Every million of them, their names should be mentioned. That's when they found the Tartaric soldiers. They had thousands of them, but it was just too many of them. But they put their names on every one of them with different characters, all with different soldiers. And they put their names on them.
That's cool.
And that's the closest that it ever came down when the whole crew got the recognition.
Wow.
From China. When he made a clay statue of everyone and the lifestyle of every one of his soldiers.
Wow.
And the soldiers' horses and stuff and the guns and all this stuff.
Wow.
Well, in that same token of the, what did you say, Mike? The actions of us all, of one of us.
The conduct of one, the faith of us all.
Yes. Wow. So in the same vein, the conduct of one, Alexander the Great, is the fate of his entire community, his entire tribe.
Exactly.
You know, so he is the embodiment of all of those people.
It's true. He represents it. Yeah.
Right. Nobody ever went that far before. Nobody ever went that far. That must have been crazy. You imagine marching for 10 years. Imagine 10 years just keep going. Not ever thinking about home. Well, you think about home, but you never know when you're coming back. Everybody had to, they went mutiny on him when he got to India. They said, man, we're not going home. We've been gone for 10 years. We lost a bunch of people. We got children by other women from other tribes that's in our group now. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, whew.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Shit, bro. Lewis, what do you have going on these days, man? What are you doing right now? You writing any new books?
I'm working on a new book that I'm just started writing. It's about eliminating self-doubt.
Nice.
I think self-doubt is the killer of dreams, and I think it holds us back from everything when we doubt ourselves.
Hey, listen, why do we have doubt? Mm. We human beings are the only species that make doubt up when it's not there.
Isn't it crazy?
That's wild.
It's crazy. That's what I'm going to be writing about. Yes, how do we overcome that self-doubt that keeps us back? And it doesn't matter. You know, you've probably seen some talented athletes over the years. Mm-hmm. Who maybe they were more talented than you or something. I don't know. And you were like, but they didn't believe in themselves. And you had enough energy to put yourself out there and believe. I met a lot of guys, maybe you did on the football field. I was not the best athlete, but I made it past a lot of the guys that I played with. And I was always like, man, you're so talented. You're a mutant. You're a freak of nature. But when it comes to the game, you get scared. And I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
I never understood it. And the thing is, it doesn't matter if you're the baddest person in the world. And if everyone believes in you and says you're the greatest, you can achieve it all. If you don't believe, you'll never do anything.
That's so interesting. This is something I always wanted to find out. Like, I have some sparring guy partners, people that I've sparring. When I'm sparring, I'm vicious. I'm like the limit. I knock your cold, break your jaw. And there's some guys in there that kick my ass, right?
And you're like,
what the fuck? But you put them in the ring, you put them on the
They're nervous. Lights,
you put them some popcorn there, and they fucking panic. Won't throw a punch. I said,
yeah.
Fight him like you fought me in the day. You know, he's fighting the same way. Please, this guy will be going after him. He's dead. And they freak out. They panic. They won't. They fucking.
I think part of it is, this is something I'm going to be researching and going down. I think part of it is our ego and opinions of other people. We care so much about the opinions of other people. If we, the way we look, if we fail, if, you know, something happens we're not proud of, we're so scared of what our friends, our family, the media thinks of us, that it holds us back from actually being in flow and giving our all.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's true, too. But there's other things that I think in that realm.
Yeah.
There's some guys that don't got shit, ain't got nothing, talk shit, pump, cough. And this guy that got the world, they don't do nothing to shine, introverted. They don't think much of themselves and shit. They're scared to talk to
people. Yeah, yeah.
Now, why is that? Now, if you're talking about self-doubt, you're
insecurities,
the
yeah.
You're scared to talk to a girl.
I know.
I would buy one. Now, forget you. I'll take this money.
I think it's,
take the car, take the house.
People are
trillions. Take the car, take the house.
I think the fear of rejection. It's like the opinion of what that person thinks of you. If they say no to you, then it means you're not worthy. And at the core of all of our fears is us not being enough. It's saying, I am not enough.
Yes.
And therefore, I'm afraid of putting myself out there, because what if this person says, you are not enough to me, I'm rejecting you? Then we get scared. And our ego takes over, and we don't want to be put in that situation.
In some cases, people killed other people for saying that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. People freak out.
And isn't it interesting that you could have the world saying, you got this, you're the greatest, and you not believe in yourself and not take up the opportunity, and in the reverse, you could have the world against you. And everyone says, no, there's no way you can do this. There's no chance. You're not good enough. And all it takes is one person to believe, and that's yourself. And when you can be against the world, but if you have the belief, then you can go and create it. And so that's what I want to
– Absolutely.
This book is about developing self-belief and eliminating self-doubt, because I think self-doubt is the killer of dreams.
That's awesome.
I used to have a mentor, and he used to say this, confidence – applied properly will supersede a genius.
Oh, yeah. The genius without confidence isn't going to do anything.
Yeah. Mm.
Doesn't matter.
Amazing.
Yeah, so I've got that.
You should interview Mike for it, dude.
I'm going to.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to, yeah, for sure. I've got that. I've got a documentary I'm looking to launch here soon that's about – it's called Chasing Greatness.
Nice.
It's all about discovering what greatness is, and I'm excited about that. And then my podcast is called The School of Greatness. So we interview people like Mike, who's going to be coming on soon. And
the telethon. I'm going to say something that John Kennedy Jr. said, all right? I've known him well before he died, right? And he said this, I met a lot of great men. But and all those great men I met, I never met, they were no good men. Mm-hmm. And he said, after meeting all these great men, I decided I want to be a good man. And that's what I said. I said, I want to be a good man.
Mm-hmm.
People told me I was great for a long time. But it didn't give me, you know, as I got older, it didn't mean anything to me. You know what I mean? And then I realized that being a good man is, you know, I mean, it's worth more than being a great man.
Wow.
All great men are not good men.
Mm-hmm.
But most good men could become great men.
Yeah, it's true.
So true. You know?
That's great.
So true. Because that doesn't fucking give you anything.
No.
All of the material, mm-hmm. success.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't do anything for your soul. You may get 5 minutes, 5 years of gratification mm-hmm. for your achievements. But it's not going to fill the hole unless you're at peace with yourself, you are in love with yourself.
Listen, we're human beings. We're human beings. Imagine, how do you take, you're a great man. How do you take that? What do you say? I'm a bad motherfucker. How do you really take that? You know, from a perspective of humanity, how do you take, you're a great man?
I just try to say,
I don't even know what that means.
If someone says that to me, I would just say, thank you. I'm trying to do my best every single day. I'm learning every day. I'm growing. I'm not perfect. And I just want to help and serve. So I just try to
absolutely
focus on service. And I say, thank you. I'm just trying to serve as much as I can.
Like my idiotic, I thought of a great man as a man like Gandhi, a man that gives up all his money, gives everything to something. Yeah. But that don't make him a great man. That's this man don't give a fuck about money. But that don't make him a good man either. Yeah. You know, he just value. He has a price, but his price is not money. It might be sex.
Yeah.
Might be liquor. Might be drugs. Or it might be his happiness. You know what I mean? And all happy people are not good people.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, you could be doing bad things and feel happy about it.
Yeah. Well, happy people are not good people.
That's interesting.
Good stuff, man.
This is fun, guys.
It's really good when you see somebody that's in a bad situation. And you try to make that situation better.
That's a good person.
That's a good person.
Yeah.
You don't have to know him or anything, but to make a situation better.
And all you could do, you could simply smile.
Yeah.
You don't have to do a lot to change someone's energy and make them feel better. You can smile. You can
100%
say, how are you? You know.
Yeah.
It's just your energy, your way of being, how you show up. So.
There's a lot of homeless people around L.A.
Yep.
You live in L.A.?
I live in West Hollywood.
Downtown L.A.
Yeah.
Oh,
West Hollywood, there's a lot of people too, yeah.
Yeah, and on my side of town in NoHo, North Hollywood.
See, in Hollywood, but Hollywood, they got the functional homeless people. They're still clean. They still know how to talk.
They got cell phones.
Yeah.
These guys downtown don't have nothing.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they're
going to
die there, man.
Yeah. It's really bad. But, you know, I try to acknowledge them, at least.
That's good.
You know, I feel like those people are so beaten down that if another soul can just acknowledge their existence, that lifts them up to some extent.
That's true. Just smile and say, hey, I hope you're doing well.
Hey, man. You know, God bless you. Good luck to you.
I don't understand. Listen, it's funny you say that. It was a story about Alexander the Great, and it was this guy, I forgot his name, but he was a homeless guy. And he never complained. He was always happy. Mm. And Alexander was the king of Greece at the time. And he said, hey, listen, I notice you. You have nothing. You're always happy. I have everything. What can I do for you? And the guy said this. He said, for once, if you can please just get out of the way of the sun so I can get my tan. And Alexander just couldn't understand why this guy had nothing, but he was happy. And he had everything, and he wasn't happy. That was confusing.
It's interesting. I've been a part of a charity called Pencil of Promise where I'm flying to Guatemala. Every year I go on a trip. We go to Guatemala, Laos, and Ghana. And
Laos
we build
is
schools.
Interesting.
It's cool there. I like it there. But we go and build schools. I've been doing it for 7-8 years. A guy named Adam Braun founded it. Scooter Braun is part of his brother. I don't know if you know Scooter
Braun. Cool. We do.
Justin Bieber.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going tonight, and every year I go on a trip for about 4 days, and I see these kids that have nothing. They're in the middle of – they're so fucking happy, man. They have nothing. They have no schools. They have no – they have a hut, but then they get like a little sandwich – and they're just hanging out with their family, and they're kicking a soccer ball in the dirt field with, you know, trees in the middle of the field, and they're so happy kicking a rock around.
Well, they don't expect anything. In this country, we were taught to expect things, even if we don't work. We expect to have that beautiful girl. We expect to have that house. We expect to have that money.
Someone to give us money, yeah.
Someone to give it to us.
They're so happy. And so when I'm there for 4 or 5 days and I come back and I drive through Beverly Hills to get to West Hollywood and I see
it's grotesque.
The material abundance and people honking in their $400,000 Bentleys or whatever and getting mad. And I'm like, these people are so happy with nothing. They've got family. They've got laughter. They've got health. And people in Beverly Hills, not everyone, obviously, but I see people that are angry and I'm frustrated.
It's a cosmic joke, man.
Isn't it crazy?
No, this is crazy. People are so fragile. Life is fragile. It's hard living life. You see people, they say they make a bad mistake, think it's over, they may kill themselves. Life is hard to live.
Mm-hmm.
By making them say, oh, God, I'm never going to get no money again. I'm never going to get my girl left me. Nobody's going to ever love me. Boom, I'm dead. You know, it's just people.
It always passes, though, right?
Yeah.
You've been through some crap.
Yeah, but you have to go through it. Some people can't go through the rain.
It's a lot of pain to go through.
Deal with that pain.
A lot of pain.
Deal with that pain.
And you have to be willing to always see the light.
It's so hard when you feel like you're suffocating,
sort of
though.
Hope. Yeah,
but it's just your mind playing tricks with you.
It is. It's all mind game.
It's on your mind fucking with you.
A mind game.
We're so human beings are so drama filled. We're movies in our own self.
That's it. It's stories we tell.
We listen to fucking shit that's not even true. And we're playing into it. We got the emotions. We're crying. It's cool. It's all right. It's over. It's gone. It's cool.
It's fucking good, man. Well,
this is fun.
What do you think, dude? We have a ball in here.
This is a great conversation.
It's a great
I'm excited to have you on soon and just talk more about this stuff. So
hell yeah, dude.
I don't think people. I don't think a lot of people know this side of you. Maybe they do.
How old are you?
I just turned 36.
So you're still young, right? So big, right?
How old are you now?
31.
Yeah, he's a baby too. But listen, do you ever think about death? Like, where the fuck am I going to go when this shit is over? I know you don't think it's a blackout. Boom.
Yeah.
I know something's going to happen.
I think about it every day.
Yeah, you do. Because it's kind of exciting too. Like, be honest.
What's next?
It's exciting. Because, you know, God didn't make us for us to blank out. Do you think God made us for us to say, hey, it's over, blank out, we don't exist anymore? Come on.
I don't think so.
I'm interested.
The galaxy is so fucking big. I think sometimes that we're in somebody's
dream.
System. No, we're in somebody's system. We're at guts. We're at cells.
We're cells.
We're living inside somebody that's just so fucking big we can't even fathom it.
Wow. Why not?
You know?
Why not? Remember in Men in Black?
Mm-hmm.
At the end, when they pull all the way out and they're just in this marble this giant being is just going flicking?
Around. That's it.
Yeah. Why not?
Who knows?
I don't know.
You know, ancient times they said we lived among giants.
Yeah.
You know? They see these giant footprints. They can't explain ancient 10,000-year-old footprints that's like 10 foot long and shit, 10 foot wide. Mm. Giant footprints.
Yeah. There's a lot. I mean, it gets weird, man. When you get
into
that
stuff.
We can't
listen. All that stuff they say, it might be true. We don't even know.
Atlantis?
Yeah. I could believe that. I could believe in Atlantis.
There's another land, too, called Pan.
Yeah?
Yes. It was like fairies and shit.
Wow.
Yeah. Lost civilization.
Peter Pan?
Pan, like the earth spirit.
Mm. Mm.
I don't know. Shit gets weird,
This
man.
Is fun, guys. I appreciate you guys.
You know what pi is? Pi is the highest number that ever.
3.14.
The pi, right? That's what it is. The highest number. The highest fucking number. Man, I have pi dollars. And we left. You get too much money.
So much.
The galaxy. Imagine. You know, the planets, all of them, Saturn, all of them, Mercury, they're like this planet. You know, inside of the planets are all rich jewels, the minerals. Yeah. All the planets have them. You know, every now and then you see meteorites hit each other, boom, you hear that dust coming. It's gold, dust, and diamonds, all that stuff coming out.
Yeah.
And just like this planet has a bunch of diamonds and minerals, and all the planets have them.
Mm.
That's why I think we're trying to get over there, if we could dig those planets to get all those minerals out of there. Yeah. Wouldn't be able to get enough planets.
You guys have hung out with some pretty rich people.
Yeah.
You think there are rich people already living on other planets?
Listen, right?
I don't think that far.
Just colonizing already? They're already
listen,
there.
Listen, I believe...
Bezos has a crib on Mars.
If it's true. You know, I don't even believe those guys have really been on the moon and all that stuff, right?
Really?
Listen.
Are you heading to Flat Earth, Mike?
No, I don't know if I'm heading there, but I'm just saying I don't know. And I know our government lied to us since the beginning of government.
Absolutely.
And we tried to, you know what I mean? They told us the story of Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
And we had to believe that. Let me tell you, the first year, I always think to myself, the first person with my genes to ever live, he could have been Chinese, he could have been white. Coming 10 billion years ago.
Mm-hmm. Never know.
Me,
we don't know.
Me. The first man figure in my life, my existence, my bloodline, could have been Chinese.
Who knows?
Yeah.
You know? Could have been a fucking dog, a gorilla. You never know.
For sure. Who knows?
We don't know. Why they keep us in this fucking perpetual state of fucking dumbness?
Fear. Yeah. Fear and dumbness.
Listen, but this is the story. When we stop being afraid, we're ready to die. Mm. Isn't that crazy? When we're no
longer
afraid,
paradox.
We're ready to die. Even when you're young, when you're no longer afraid, you usually die. You know?
Interesting.
Fear keeps us alive. Fear is a friend of ours.
You have some realization.
Yeah.
And then you go. Should we wrap this up?
Sure, why not?
Do you guys have a special ending, too?
No.
Oh. Good to see you,
thank
man. This
you,
is powerful.
Man. This is awesome.
It's beautiful. Big Mike.
Hope to see you again.
Appreciate you, man.
Thank you.
It's beautiful meeting you, man.
Mike, amazing episode, brother. Wait, where can people find you?
Yeah, tell us.
At Lewis Howes, LewisHowes, and on Instagram or wherever, and then School of Greatness Podcast.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Check it, y'all.
Why do you think we put greatness and wealth in the same category?
I don't do that.
Well, you know most people.
Yeah. You know, I think it's...
that's what I thought, too.
I think they think of, like, wealth and success. The reason why, for me, it wasn't called School of Success, because I think that word is, I don't know, it's just not used that well. It's tied around, like, money and accomplishments, where greatness, for me, is not about money and accomplishments. It's about service. It's about how can you use the
sacrifice.
Stepping into your highest self.
Yeah, it's about how can you use the gifts and talents that you were given, that you were born with, to cultivate them and pursue a dream that you have. And in that pursuit, how can you impact the people around you, the maximum number of people? For me, that's
greatness. What do we do about homeless people? What do we do about having homeless hotels? Imagine a hotel like Vegas, like the MGM Grand, a 5,000-room hotel. Imagine something like that for the homeless. Mm. And as they go in the hotel, they learn how to take care of the hotel. They learn how to handle it, take the people. They learn how to bellhop. They learn how to administration. They learn all that. And then they build more hotels all over the world for homeless people to learn how to live their lives.
I think it's a great concept if they have the responsibility and want to do the work and want to show up and work. Listen, you know, that's the challenge.
Shit, man. Well, we'll have you on again and we'll go deeper on success and greatness. I think it's awesome, man.
I appreciate it, man.
Appreciate you, man. All right, everybody. That was another awesome edition of Hot Boxing.
Yeah.
Check us out. Subscribe to our YouTube channel right now, Hot Boxing with Mike Tyson. Also, check us out on Spotify as well as iTunes. Be sure to subscribe. We've also got some merchandise up. Dope shirts, hoodies. We got dad hats.
Nice.
Check them out. Hotboxingpodcast.com. I'm Evan Britton.
And I'm Mike Tyson.
And we're out of here, y'all.
Gone. Ow!
Great, guys.
That was fun.
Hi, this is Danny LaRue, the Real GM Radio Podcast, and I want to take a minute to talk about DeAndre Ayton, the number one pick of the 2018 draft. Definitely has not gotten the attention of high-profile lottery picks Luka Doncic and Trae Young during the early going, but he has been excellent and a key part of the Phoenix Suns being on the precipice of the NBA Finals. Ayton is presenting a matchup nightmare for the LA Clippers that Rudy Gobert simply was not. Gobert is a wonderful player, deserving Defensive Player of the Year, but Ayton puts more pressure on opposing defenses. He's used his size mismatches for offensive rebounds, and he's also been able to contest shots around the basket and make life hard on the Clippers. Clippers there too. So it is a huge performance for him, averaging 20 points, 13 and a half rebounds through the first four games of the series. And it's been so exciting to see a physically talented player really come into his own on the brightest stage so far of his career. Hi, this is Daniel Roux from the Real GM Radio Podcast. It's that time of year again, and all eyes are now on the pro basketball, hockey playoffs, and Major League Baseball season. BetOnline.net has all the action. Basketball, the playoff battles continue as their teams make the run for the championship. America's pastime is in full swing. And let's not forget about hockey's chase for the cup. BetOnline has you covered. If you love golf, MMA, championship boxing, they have that too. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports, the news, scores, and odds. So head to the website, use your mobile device, and bring home the game with BetOnline.net.